these guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
I can't disagree with that.
Jackpot!
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I'll say this about the guaranteeing and the predicting things. I think it's totally different when it's an underdog. Like, I think Jacksonville doing this. And didn't Mercedes Lewis, you said, write something really interesting today in the Players' Tribune?
The Players' Tribune, yes. Well, talking about Tom Coughlin and how he has changed the culture there. Tom Coughlin. Ooh.
But his headline on his story was, we can beat anyone.
Yep. Yes. Yeah. But the tenor of the story was that relative to from the day he left last year to the day he came back this year, the whole thing was different. And the culture he attributes to Coughlin.
Which I buy. But again, he's sort of saying we can beat anyone, which is another way of saying we can go into New England and win.
They're confident.
And Ramsey's predicting they're confident, which I think from their perspective is actually okay. You know what I mean? It's like, that is not what Pittsburgh did last week. Pittsburgh as a prohibited favorite disrespected and overlooked an opponent and thought they were going to be somewhere else and they didn't even have to show up. No, Jacksonville is a marked underdog that's trying to talk itself into the fact that it can beat the Patriots. Different. Still not the way I would do it or that Bill would want his team to do it, but I think it makes it different, doesn't it? I mean, it does. And I think some of the teams that have beaten you when they've been confident and talked, and we've said before, you know, the Jets had a different mindset, they beat you. The Ravens have a different mindset, they beat you. The Giants had a different mindset, they beat you. They were all underdogs. They were all underdogs, either coming in here or in the Super Bowl, prohibitive underdogs. So the Giants had to treat it a little different. So that's all, and that's where I think the Jaguars are. I don't hold that against them, their trash talk. I don't. The Steelers, whole different thing. When you do that as a favorite and you overlook an opponent, that is bad news.
Well, look, and as the details come out as to what happened in Pittsburgh, I mean, you look at that and say,
oh, great stuff, by the way.
They lost. I put that whole thing on Tomlin. I'm sorry, I do. That whole thing on they were just out to lunch. He didn't have that team under control at all.
Yeah, it was Ed Bouchette, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
Can I read it?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay, so the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reported today that Tomlin wants his players and coaches to report to the locker room 2 hours before kickoff for games. Which I even think is a weak-ass reporting time.
Yeah,
that's, what do you mean 2 hours?
That's too tight.
That's
I agree.
That's a small window.
It should be about 4 hours, but go ahead.
The buses, I think, the last bus gets there 3 hours before, if my memory serves, maybe even earlier than that. But that's usually the time frame, 3 hours. Two? So anyway, he wants the players to report 2 hours before kickoff and games.
Take your time. No need to rush.
He says, and Bouchette says, that was continually ignored by both players and a coach or two.
What an operation.
And it doesn't take much of a genius to figure out who one of those coaches might be.
Todd Haley.
Yeah, party boy. The guy who got into the bar fight across from the stadium on New Year's Eve.
The plan is to be here 2 hours before we kick it off.
Have a few drinks if you want before you come.
Make sure you can get taped.
Bouchette writes that not only did Le'Veon Bell arrive much later than that for the playoff game against Jacksonville, as well as one coach,
Haley.
Bell missed practically the entire Saturday walkthrough the day before, showing up about 5 minutes before practice ended. Tomlin's reaction to Mitchell, what was the safety, the first name?
Mike Mitchell.
Mike Mitchell supposedly yelling at the Jaguars outside their locker room before the playoff game. Quote, that's part of what I was talking about in today's climate, he replied. That's really kind of irrelevant to me. So, Le'Veon Bell, he was up till 1 in the morning the night before tweeting. Of course he was late. He had to sleep in. That's the kind of outfit they run in Pittsburgh, Mass.
I mean, to me, that's on the coach. I'm sorry. That's 100% on the coach. You show up with 5 minutes left in the walkthrough? Hey, how you guys doing? Did I miss anything?
It's another reason why I preferred them over the Jaguars this week.
Seriously,
you're going to get a more prepared operation than that nonsense.
That's unbelievable to me. Like, why even bother at that stage?
Yeah, right.
You better off just meeting everybody in the locker room.
Right.
Just wait there. Like, hey, I was going to come out, but I just blew it off.
No, it's like showing up for the final word at 5:55.
Exactly.
I was a little late, guys. Sorry. Here's Ryan in Nashua. Go ahead, Ryan.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call again. I get it. You guys undervalue the defense. But if this game turns out to be a much closer defensive game, because, you know, Brady's hurt, whatever it may be. But, Blake Bortles is bad. But if he goes 1-for-11, 1-for-50, whatever it may be, like he did against Pittsburgh, and he finds Marquise Lee again, like he did against Pittsburgh, are you worried about that might be the one decision maker that
No, let me tell you the only thing that I'll give Bortles credit for, because I saw it last week, and this is where I'll give Coughlin or Marone or whoever some credit. I thought there was some really well-designed stuff last week out of Jacksonville. Again, that touchdown pass to the fullback was a great play call.
Excellent.
Really was. And there was some other stuff, you know, to the running backs and stuff in the flat and stuff that sort of played to Bortles' strengths. Some running, some read option stuff, and then, you know, a little toss out in the flat. And, like, all that stuff is what he does because he's a ham and egger. He sucks. So you have to manage him. You have to manage his game plan. I thought they did a great job of managing his game plan. So can they come in here and do some little dink and dunk stuff against your linebackers and get him moving a little bit? Yes. And I think you're sort of vulnerable there. The strength of your defense, too, is in your corners and your safety. Can you throw on the Patriots linebackers? You bet. So if they were smart enough to do it last week and, you know, do what they can do it this week, I'll give them that. I still don't see them getting to 20 points.
See, I just think that the Patriots defense philosophically is so different than Pittsburgh.
And then and then when you get to the red zone, what are you going to do? Because you can no longer dink and dunk, and you got to put it in some windows.
I don't think the Patriots are going to fall for, you know, some of the play actions or misdirection stuff. Like, they're going to be in their spots. That's what they're going to do, and there's going to be fewer places for Bortles to throw.
We've got Ron in. Ron's calling us from Mass General. Here we go. Go ahead, Ron. What do you got?
I'd just like to say thank you for taking my call first, but what people are missing with all of this with Brady, if you read into the fact that he got his thumb stuck in the helmet, basically what had happened to him, if that was the case, his thumbnail has been totally ripped off. If you look at that picture and you see, it's not a splint. It is a bomb that is put there along with a big, thick padding to try to get it to smooth out. And as far as people saying stitching going on, if it did pull out from underneath all the way up to the first knuckle, yes, it does need to be cut open. It does need to be stitched inside.
Ron.
Yes.
Thank you for weighing in. I really do appreciate it, Maz. Go ahead. You're laughing.
Do you want to imitate Dr. Dud there, Maz?
Yeah, Phil Guy, I think what happened is I think he might have had the nail ripped off, but it's worse if it's on a toe. Because if you have a toenail ripped off, then you can't put any pressure, and he'll be, like, thrown off his back foot.
Matt in Braintree, what do you got for me, Matt?
No pressure.
This is kind of off topic, but I just, what really grinds my gears is Drew Bledsoe, and I guess he's going to be, like, the ceremonial.
Hold on captain. 1 second, so people know what you're talking about. The honorary captain, which they do for playoff games, is Drew Bledsoe. How do you feel about that, Matt?
Oh, I love it.
Okay, this is a guy, this gets totally underreported, and it drives me insane. This guy admitted when he retired, okay, he admitted he hated playing football and that his favorite day of the year was the last day of the season, and his least favorite day was the day before training camp.
So
and the fact that they keep giving this guy like awards and oh, he's so great, this guy didn't even like football.
Matt,
he just yeah.
That's not being fair. I'm not a huge Drew Bledsoe fan, but he didn't hate football. And he's a tough guy, and he was a good Patriot. So, like, be fair. And those quotes you're talking about, I've never heard. I've never heard Brady's. Bledsoe.
I'm always quick to dump on Bledsoe in those dark times, but I don't remember anything like that.
He was saying my favorite day of the year was the last day of the football. I never remember. I covered him. I don't remember saying that. So just be fair to the guy. Now, how do you feel about him as honorary captain?
Not great.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
I don't.
Again.
Oh, I love it. I think it's great.
That name to me is synonymous with the dark
losing,
times.
And yeah, we're losing these games, not winning these games.
Yes,
oh, I love
he
it.
Won that game. He helped him get to the Super Bowl the last time these two met in the AFC Championship game. But I don't know. How about Willie Clay, who made that pick in the end zone to seal the game, maybe?
Oh, I look at it totally differently than you guys do. I look at it as this is the guy who Tom Brady took his job. And here we are now 17, 18 years later, and no big deal. You bring him back, and he's the honorary captain. They'll be out there together for the coin toss. Oh,
bring up Brewski from Bristol. They don't lose
God,
when it's Brewski.
So many. How many expatriates now have 3, 4, 5 rings that are just rolling around here, or you can fly in a million bleeping guys, multi-champion Patriots as a part of this run, and you sort of go to the era before when they didn't win?
That's how I felt when I heard it.
I like it. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust, baby. If this is the end, Brady and Bledsoe say goodbye together.
Right. So there you go. Right. So he's here to say goodbye. He's as a perfect bookend to the Patriots dynasty, which Murray thinks is crumbling down on Sunday because Brady's hurt.
I think there's a poetic symmetry to that. I do.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
No one says it like they do, like they do.
So my question to the people of Boston is, what are you, nuts?
Felger and Mazz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Brian Hoyer will handle one more snap and drop to knee in victory formation as the final 35 seconds elapse. He goes down. And Bill Belichick tonight coaching in his 37th playoff game as a head coach. That's an NFL record. Leads the Patriots along with Tom Brady by his side into a 12th conference championship game. A 7th straight trip to the AFC championship. And the Patriots will stage it right here at Gillette next week versus either Jacksonville or Pittsburgh. In the wake of their 35-14 rout of the Tennessee Titans.
All right, that's Bob Soucy calling action of Brian Hoyer, which he will be doing again this Sunday here on 98.5 The Sports Hub for the AFC Championship game. Pat's Jacksonville, 3 o'clock here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Way to get your Hoyer work in early, Bob. Get used to it.
Is that because you expect him to take the first snap or the last snap?
I expect, once again, you to be calling victory formations with Brian Hoyer is what I expect. So what do you make of this whole week? What do you make of Brady?
Never a dull moment. I mean, there's always drama around this team, whether it's a bye week talk about something that was written or, of course, in the case of Tom this week. And it takes me back to a couple of different times during the last few years. There was the preseason game where he had the scissors, remember, and he cut his hand.
Yeah, sure. Well, he was trying to scrape off the NFL logo because of the suspension.
So, I thought about that immediately. I think there was a bout with the flu or a virus just before a playoff game, and it might have been a conference championship a couple of years ago, went out to Super Bowl 49, certainly under the weather. So there's always been something, it seems, that surrounds this team this week for me, and at least in my experience. And yet they find a way to withstand the storm, as Tom Brady said last week in his post, that he is the storm. And, you know, I would be shocked, beyond shocked, if he didn't give it a go on Sunday, regardless of what the condition is. And right now it's a great mystery, but...
give it a go. Stop, please. If he didn't
I'm a little concerned about my own thumb here, Tony. I've got a little cut here as well.
You know, survive the storm. He's got a little boo-boo on his hand, for crying out loud.
Bobby, how seriously should we be taking the Jaguars?
Well, there's... concerned
because
defensively.
I
know you guys are.
I mean, admittedly, I'm not. I'm not taking them seriously. I'm just not. Should I?
I think you should take their talent and athleticism defensively very seriously because they have a playmaking defense with the 8 touchdowns. They can get to the quarterback and strip the ball from the quarterback, and they can get to the quarterback with 4. They don't blitz generally. I think 18-20% blitz rate during the season. So those 55 sacks, yes, a large number of them came against very inferior competition, 10 in a game against Houston early when the Texans line didn't have Dwayne Brown and really was porous and Tom Savage was a quarterback. Another 10 and 20 quarterback hits against Jacoby Brissett, who took a lot of punishment this year for Indianapolis. But still, you look at the athletes. Yannick Ngakoue, I think, is one of the more unheralded players in this league coming from the edge. He's the guy who generally gets to those strip sacks like he did against Pittsburgh or scoops up a fumble like against Tennessee in the regular season finale and runs it back 60-plus yards. The speed of the linebackers, the ability of their corners, Boye proved it last year in the playoffs for Houston. Ramsey is long and has the length and athleticism to be a lockdown guy. That certainly, I think, poses problems for the Patriots.
And how much do you give the Coughlin factor? Any?
You know, I talked to their beat writer from the Florida Times-Union, Ryan O'Halloran, who said Tom Coughlin hasn't stuck his head in a team meeting all year. He's there primarily. He sets the tone for the organization, but he's there primarily at this point in time as a sounding board for the coaching staff and to support the coaching staff, but in no way takes a role either with the team directly or in terms of managing the strategy going into a game. And you know, I don't think it really takes Tom Coughlin to recognize what the Giants did well in either one of those Super Bowl victories.
I'm not talking about Coughlin, I'm talking about Marone. Does he know?
No, you know, he's a tough guy. He's Bronx-born and bred. I mean, he's a guy who played in the NFL a little bit, but he's coached under Bill Parcells. He's been around Coughlin in the past for stretches. He's been around, he's gotten to know Belichick, coached with Sean Payton in New Orleans. I mean, he's been on some quality staffs under some quality coaches. He came into Gillette, and I know it was a throwaway game for the Patriots in a lot of respects, but still ended a long losing streak. In fact, led the Bills to their first ever win at Gillette Stadium in the 2014 regular season finale, and Nathaniel Hackett was his play caller then. So they've had that experience of coming here and going up against the Pats. Granted, not the same as in an AFC championship game, but you know, at least he can lean on that a little bit. I don't think he strikes me as a guy who'd be intimidated whatsoever. Now, in terms of strategy and matching wits with the Pats and having his team as well prepared as the Patriots will be and as the Steelers were not, that's another matter.
That's what I'm talking about. I need to see it from him in a spot like this. Bob Sosa here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. We'll have the call at 3 o'clock with Scott Zolak. You have something else?
So I was just going to say about Marone, Bob, that to me, the one thing that I do give him credit for, and he did in Pittsburgh, fourth down early in the game, went for it, they score a touchdown, right? And also, if you look at the history of them, they've been aggressive on fourth downs. They have, you know, run some trick plays. It feels like he recognizes that they might have to do some extraordinary things in order to win a game in Foxborough. Like, that part of it, I look at and say, okay, maybe he gets it.
Yeah, look at it one way or the other. I asked him about the propensity to go for it on fourth down, including fake punts, and I used the word aggressiveness on the teleconference the other day, and he said he doesn't see it as aggressiveness. He relies a lot on the analytics, so... you know, he's an offensive lineman by nature. That's the position he played. But I think he has a cerebral approach, and he's a tough-minded coach. And players from Jacksonville told players for the Patriots how hard they worked going back to the preseason. So I think he has changed the culture there. I think he's got an aggressive mindset, even if he does rely on the analytics. And like I said, I don't think he'll be intimidated in that sense. And he knows he's going to have to take chances, I'd have to think, coming in here to try to win this game, especially given the limitations of their offense, despite the 45 points against Pittsburgh.
Bob, we've totally dismissed the offense of the Jacksonville Jaguars, should we? I mean, what's there? What's dangerous on that side of the ball for Jacksonville?
I think you look at two things that are the same as last week. You stop the run. It was Derrick Henry. Now it's Leonard Fournette. Different schemes or whatever. And you make the quarterback beat you reading the whole field from the pocket and not allowing him to get out and pick up third downs with his legs and whatnot. And not allow the movement to give him some easy reads, you know, where he doesn't have to scan the whole field, where he can come off play action, maybe with a bootleg, or come off play action and it's a little pop pass over the middle. Mariota, I think, is a better quarterback than Blake Bortles. You put the game in Blake Bortles' hands, and if he doesn't get any help from his defense scoring-wise or with short fields like he did last week for Pittsburgh, then it becomes even more of a difficult challenge. I think the Patriots will be well prepared to stop Leonard Fournette and control him enough that Jacksonville can't be one-dimensional the way the Jags have been during stretches of this season and win this game.
Okay, overall, as a broadcaster slash fan, are you glad it's, you know, the March of the Tomato Cans, or did you want Pittsburgh? Do you wish that Carson Wentz was still healthy? Do you wish Aaron Rodgers was still sitting on the other side, or even the Falcons, or a Seattle? You know, do you like the fact that it's the easy road, or do you wish there was something more out there?
Honestly, taking into account that I don't have to host 4 hours a day, 5 days a week leading up to the game, it really doesn't matter to me. And I hope I never get in the position where I say, well, it's only this or only that. And in fact, I had to fight myself last week, and a lot of it was because of what was written in the storylines of the previous 2 weeks going back to the end of the regular season. But I found myself thinking, you know, this is a playoff game. You got to be excited about this. Don't take it for granted. And I hope I never sit in that position where I do. Whether it's Jacksonville or not, I still think it's going to be a tense, tight game. And the Jacksonville certainly poses problems for the Pats, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And if the Jags get out to a start where they get one of those plays like they did last week with the interception by Miles Jack, and they're not chasing the Patriots, they can stay in the game. But whether it's Jacksonville or if the Patriots are fortunate enough to win and they play Nick Foles or Case Keenum,
really, you don't care whether it's Nick Foles or Carson Wentz?
Oh, I'd always rather see the better player and the better team.
Absolutely. That's all.
Yeah,
that's
I'm like that all the time. I hate to see any player of significance get injured.
Yeah, but take
that factor.
Take that part out of it. Like you said a second ago, you know, you had to fight yourself. I thought you were going to say fight yourself from prevent yourself from falling asleep last week against Tennessee.
That's a wretched game to broadcast. It is. I'm sorry.
Which game would you rather call, that game or the Seattle game?
It's better than digging ditches. I understand. You have a great job, but.
Yeah.
Right, would you, exactly, to Maz's question.
Like, I just think, you know, and look, I'm not saying, the fans I totally get, that ultimately it's about the win. And listen, I despite what people think, I don't want to see them lose. But I do like the drama.
Oh, no question. Yeah. I mean, you could call a perfect broadcast, nobody ever does, and I certainly come far from it any time I step in the booth. And if it's a blowout, people may remember a few things. You could screw up every play in the game until Malcolm Butler steps in front of Lockett and he intercepts that pass in the end zone, or like last year, you can call a terrible game for 3.5 quarters, but people are going to remember what is said when the Patriots come back and win, regardless of how you said it or what you said. They're going to like how it sounded because of the, you know, the compelling theater that exists. So absolutely, as a broadcaster, you want to be a storyteller too, and you want a more interesting story with more interesting narratives, and it's always great when it's Tom Brady versus another star quarterback. That's what made the Patriots Colts, the Patriots Broncos, I think, so intriguing for a long time, because you had Brady and Manning, even though they didn't play against each other, literally.
All right, so Bob, this is your fifth year calling Patriots games. You've been to the AFC Championship game all 5 years. That's the way it works. Every year they go. That's just so you know, you'll be in the AFC Championship game every single year. That's the way it works. It's never going to turn. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Well, you've been to the AFC Championship every year, huh? Boy, what a horseshoe. Yeah. You got webbed up those little cheeks of yours.
Soci and Zoe with the call, 3 o'clock on Sunday here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Felger and Maz.
This is Felger.
The man is beholden to no one.
And Maz.
I don't really know what to expect.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Football today?
I'm not talking about that.
Did you practice today?
I was out there. It was fun.
Tom, how confident are you that you will be playing on Sunday?
We'll see.
Why are you wearing gloves to the press conference?
I'm warning him before.
What exactly happened on Wednesday? The collision that you had with the teammate?
I'm not talking about it. Yeah.
You played in a game in more pain than you're in right now?
I played in a lot of games with pain, so.
From what I understand, though, he did practice today and he did throw. That's the word. I also got word on what the injury was. Single source. Take it for what it's worth. I trust a source. Said no fracture, no ligament, just a cut from hitting the buckle on someone's helmet. 4 stitches around the knuckle shouldn't affect him. The one thing I will say about the knuckle, my person didn't specify which one. In other words, I've heard other rumblings that it was the webbing between the thumb and the finger, that the webbing area. So when my person says 4 stitches around the knuckle, could they mean the bottom knuckle?
Sure.
And that's what it is. And if you're getting stitches, if you're watching the simulcast, you see me playing with it. But it's like, if you're getting stitches here in the webbing, is that around that bottom knuckle? You didn't specify which knuckle. And when I hear around the knuckle of the thumb, I think about up top here.
Sure.
But, that's your knuckle too, isn't it?
Yes.
So, anyway, that's what I'm hearing. Either way, I don't think it matters. I think the Patriots win going away. But I think he was back out there today and he was throwing.
I'd be more worried if the cup was on the other side of the thumb. That's my only point.
On the inside.
Yeah. The part that will actually touch the ball. Because if you have a cut there that required stitches, well, now you're talking about a gash. And that's going to be painful. So could they shoot it up? Sure, but then now you're talking about throwing the ball with a numb thumb. So one way or the other, you know, it's going to be uncomfortable. Could that affect accuracy? Sure.
Can they beat the Jaguars going away with a numb thumb?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They're going to pants this team with a numb thumb. They're not going to have to worry about that numb thumb. Right?
I'll take a numb thumb. Just anything but Brian Hoyer.
See, I don't think Jacksonville's pass defense lines up perfectly for the Patriots. I mean, to beat the Patriots.
Absolutely right. I agree.
Because their strength's at corner. And who cares if you take away Brandon Cooks?
Right. It's outside. It's outside. Take away the outside. No problem. The Patriots, a lot of seasons, don't even have an outside. Neat. Take away the outside the numbers.
I mean, this is why, look, I'm interested in seeing how the Jags approach it on defense. Because if they move Ramsey somewhere else and they put Ramsey on Gronk or, even Ramsey on Amendola, take away the middle of the field, or that's the logic. Okay, or Bouye on Amendola, whatever. The idea to put one of their corners to take away the middle of the field or some of the space there, that would mean more to me.
Here's Dave in Carver. Hi, Dave. David!
Hello.
You're on the air, David. Yes.
What's happening, guys? Just want to say, love your show. And I had a cut on my hand that's the same as they're talking about, right in the webbing of your hand right there, and it was 5 or 6 stitches. I was a carpenter swinging a hammer the next day. My band played a show that night as a guitar player. He'll be fine.
All right, and you ripped it. Attaboy. We're not doing this. We're not doing this.
Yeah, because other than swinging the hammer, I had to play the guitar.
Here's Nick in Providence. Go, Nick.
Hey, guys. Thanks for getting me through another work day. I just want to know, who do you think is more capable of beating the Jaguars this week, Brian Hoyer or Jacoby Brissett?
Okay, that's another good one. do you lament the trade of Jacoby Brissett? Never mind Garoppolo, which we've done in the last couple of days. Can you also say, well, would you be better off with Brissett?
No.
I'd take Brissett over Hoyer.
You're getting ready for Jacksonville.
Sorry, Bill. Toss up.
Yeah, that's basically a coin flip.
I mean, ideally, you're going with the guys that you've drafted and developed and that have been in your system and been in your playbook. That's what you want to do.
Exactly.
So
more reps, more starts, more games played for Hoyer. I would go with Hoyer. I mean, they both are terrible, but I would take Hoyer.
I would go with Brissett, but it's really not. You know, that's not the one you lament. You lament Garoppolo. And if you were going to trade him for what you traded him for, why October and not February? Like that.
Just for the insurance policy.
If it was just for a second-round pick, what's the diff? Keep him for the rest of the year.
I'd feel so much better about this.
Again, I don't think it's going to matter on Sunday. But, you know, as far as Bill cares, he would have had a better week of practice with Garoppolo out there. I can tell you that. It is agenda-free Friday, and so a couple different things are on the board. Cam and Taunton with the Bruins thought. Quickly, go ahead.
It's unbelievable what this team is doing. I mean, Mike, you wrote them off for the four games. I know some people that wrote them off before the season started.
Yes.
Said that they were going to be a horrible team just because there were too many kids on the team, and that's not it. But it was unbelievable to me. Is you can look this up on Boston Sports Inf, your guy on Twitter there.
Yep.
You know they've only lost twice in regulation this year when Backus has been in the lineup?
Is that right?
Yep. To me, I mean, of course, you know, DJ and all those guys would rather have Louis Erickson. To me, I mean, Backus, look, it wasn't a great signing because that contract's still an overpayment, but the character that guy brings, and, you know, he deserves to be in the lineup. At least he deserves to be in the lineup versus Bolesky. But what worries me now is Sweeney. Now Sweeney has to start making NHL moves, and he has not done a good job with that so far. Now he has to make additions to an NHL team. That is going to worry me.
It's scary because their NHL moves have been caca, so I don't blame you for being scared of that. No question about it. But it, just again, you know, their lineup mess. You know, if I had told you going into the season that they'd, you know, okay, so here are their lines. Marchand, Bergeron, Pastrnak. You'd say, good, that's a good.
Love it.
That's a good first line. Their second line is Krejci between Jake DeBrusque and Ryan Spooner.
I'd be terrified.
If I saw that line, if you told me on day one that midway through the year, Ryan Spooner would be their second line right wing and their second line would be DeBrusque and Spooner, I'd say something went horribly wrong. Oh, this is a nothing season. They had to play Spooner on the second line at wing. Oh, they suck. There's no chance. And then if you told me the third line was Riley Nash between Danton Heinen and David Backus, I'd say, oh my God, they're really porked. Backus can't even get on the top six. They suck. Backus has been demoted to the third line. Oh my God, you blow. This is a lottery team. And then if you told me before the season started, they're going to have a fourth line that's going to play a lot. It's going to be Nola Chari, Tim Schaller, and Ryan Corrali. I'd say, oh my goodness. They're going for one of the top three picks in the draft. I'd look at that. And then if you said that their third pairing would be Kevin Miller and Matt Grzelcyk, I'd say this team blows.
I mean, it is. It's stunning.
Who could predict that lineup? Again, now, you know, I like DeBrusque now. Spooner's been playing well. That third line's been amazing.
Heinen.
You know, we all know it now. But if I said to you, that's your team on day one, you would look at me and say, they suck. There's no shot.
Heinen's got 31 points. He's fourth on the team in scoring.
Ryan Spooner as a second line wing, and you're the third best team in hockey. That is, if you told me you had that, then please.
I'll tell you though, their best players have played great.
No question.
Bergeron, Pastrnak, Marchand,
McAvoy,
Machara. Like they've all been good. They really have. All their best players have been good.
Here's a quick Red Sox thought from Connor and Needham. Go ahead, Connor.
Hey, how's it going, guys? I'm just wondering, what the hell do you think Dombrowski's doing offering J.D. Martinez this five-year deal? I mean, where are they even going to put him?
5 and 125, Maz, going to Michael Silverman.
Yeah, I told you. To me, it's too much. I wouldn't offer him. I mean, look, in the current market, 5 and 125 is not too much. Okay, it's not. This is the world we live in now. I'm just telling you, for that player, I'd walk away. I wouldn't even give him that. I wouldn't give him 5 and 100. If I were them, I'd completely back out of it. But Dombrowski's got himself in a corner. They've convinced themselves that they absolutely positively have to have a bat, which generally I agree with. I'm just at the stage where I look at it and say, I'd rather wait, see if something better comes along.
What's frustrating to me is that Giancarlo Stanton was $29 million a year. Now you're going to pay J.D. Martinez 25, and this is the exact thing I feared would happen.
Right, and you know, and the prospects for Stanton were not that great. And Stanton is a game changer. He is a landscape changer. He gives the team a buzz factor, all of it. J.D. Martinez didn't do any of that.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
This is Felger and Mass.
I'm a hypocrite.
Wow.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
I don't want to see him even sniff the field. If there's anything wrong with Brady, it starts going all wrong. He's going to start. He's going to play. But if that thumb's a mess and it's real bad and he's throwing picks, okay, we got to sit you down because you're in a lot of pain. And in comes Brian Hoyer. Oh, God.
You're still going to win.
Ugh.
You're still winning.
No.
You're
not if
winning.
Hoyer gets in there. I'm off the table if that happens. You're on your own on that one.
I'm happy to be. Genius walks alone. That's
no.
My good friend Gary Tangway.
So does stupidity.
Yeah, I think they beat this team, whether it's Brian Hoyer or Tom Brady. It will be Tom Brady, and you will only see Hoyer once again in the victory formation at the end of the ballgame. Because why take a needless snap even to kneel down when you're recovering from four stitches in your thumb? And so that's that. Back to the phones. Here's Sean and Marble. Hi, Sean.
Hey, guys. Quick thought. Imagine if we still had Jimmy G and Bledsoe was here and Jimmy G got the start. And how fitting would that be? That would just be awesome.
Yeah. Then Bledsoe as the honorary captain would make sense, Maz. Then I would like that.
Hey, but on the Jimmy G trade, if the Pats didn't trade him this season, if they waited to the offseason, I would assume that San Fran's second round pick would still be on the table.
You bet.
We actually got a worse pick because it probably would have been the second pick in the second round instead of the eighth or ninth pick in the second round. So not only do we not have Jimmy G for this weekend if Brady is legitimately hurt bad enough to not play or not play well, but now we have a worse pick even if we had got the same second round pick. So
you lost draft position. You lost track.
Yeah.
Matt Castle, did you ever look it up? I forgot to do it myself. Matt Castle, I thought was you got the 38th pick, but it might have been the 34th or the 36th.
I thought it was 34th. I thought it was at the top of the second, but go ahead.
Matt Bleepin Castle got you 30-something. You're going to end up with 40-something because, again, San Fran's either going to be 40 or 41 based on a coin flip. I think they tied with another team.
34th.
So you got 34 for Castle, and you're going to get 40 or 41 for that just doesn't compute. You could have traded him for the exact same thing, probably better, under the franchise tag, even though you know you're not keeping him, and even though the market knows you're not keeping him, it's still playing one team off of the other. Where Cleveland's still maybe ready to give you a first-round pick for him, so then you have to go to San Fran and say, look, you got to give us something better because we don't want to send him to Cleveland, but they'll give us a first, so you got to come up. Which is frustrating, you know, as it is to mismanage an asset like that, but on top of it, you had insurance. And it just sort of came to the fore. Now, again, it's not going to matter this week because you're beating this team no matter what. And the schedule, even in the last two rounds of the playoffs, has swung in your favor. So it's really not going to matter. But I think it's just a timely second guess, and I think it's fair. Michelle is in New Hampshire. What do you got for us, Michelle?
Hi, guys. Murray, you need to stop being a negative Nancy. We played the Jacksonville Bills game was 10-3 against the Bills. So I'm really not worried about their offense. I did want to say that...
How'd the offense look against Pittsburgh last week, lady?
Yeah, hey, it was great, but I think that the Steelers, they weren't there to play. Their minds were in the clouds. They were planning to play against the Patriots. They weren't planning for Jacksonville.
That liability that is Blake Bortles. No turnovers. Pretty damn good on third down. Time and time again.
I agree. And again, they lost to the Titans twice.
Thank you, Michelle.
Twice. I just want to say I'll take your Tom Coughlin and I'll raise you Ernie Adams. I'm not worried about Tom Coughlin or anything that he has. I firmly believe that anything that Tom Coughlin can offer Ernie Adams will have, at this point, an answer for it, especially considering the last two.
Right, no, especially
goals.
Since Ernie's
going to be beaten again.
Yeah, no, especially since Ernie's going to tap into Tom's headset and then he's going to know exactly what he's saying during the game. That's why Ernie's going to have the upper hand on Coughlin. He's going to be listening. He'll be listening in, woman.
How'd you like it last week, lady?
Was that necessary, Murray?
I forgot her name. I'm trying to type something up in the headlines.
Lady?
Here.
Huh? How'd you like it last week? How'd you like
woman.
Jacksonville 3 years ago, woman?
Kyle in Foxborough has something for you, too, Murray. Go ahead, Kyle.
Hey, Kyle.
Hey, guys. Just think about this. The NFL wants the Patriots to win. They don't want Jacksonville in the Super Bowl. That's bad for business. Jacksonville's the rectum of America.
Not only, Kyle, your phone blows. Not only is Jacksonville the rectum of America, it's a tiny little one. It'd be one thing if it were a giant rectum, you know, like Houston. Or at least you get a huge audience from the people of Houston. It's the smallest market. It's no, it's, maybe it's 31st. It can't be bigger than Green Bay, but it's, you know, it's down in that range. It's one of the smallest markets in the league, and it is a rectum.
Totally. Listen, there's no question Jacksonville is a... What was his initial point? Now I lost my train of thought.
No, no. So now you the point was, Mass, is now the NFL is on your side.
So who's the handicapper that's on with the midday show?
R.J. Bell.
R.J. Bell, yes.
I think he's right. I was listening to him today. I think he's right. If the NFL wants a certain team or not, oh, they need you. They don't just want you. They need you.
This year more than any other.
Do they need Jacksonville and Blake Bortles versus Philadelphia and Case Keenum or, whatever, whoever comes out of the NFC side? Jacksonville in the Super Bowl after the year they've had, the last 2 years they've had, ratings-wise, revenue-wise, all of that, to then get Jacksonville, the tiny little rectum of America, in the Super Bowl would be disaster for them.
No, it's a Jacksonville is a, this year is a Super Bowl killer. That's what they are. The Jags get in, the Super Bowl dies right there. The Super Bowl 52 dies right there on the turf in Minneapolis before the ball even gets kicked off if the Jaguars are in it. I mean, if there's ever been a fix, this is the week to do it.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.